Good morning, everyone. It's Tuesday, August 2, the Big Sports Breakfast, Sky Sports Radio, and a very good morning to you wherever and however you are listening. And with Clarkie still on his sojourn for another week and a half or so, we've got our Tuesday special guest host subbing in once again. He is none other than Forestville's finest, Dean Bulldog Richie. Morning to you, doggy. How are you?
Yeah, good, Middo. Good morning. Good morning, Lozza.
Morning, buddy. How are you?
I don't know how you guys do it every day. Jeez, that alarm clock reverberates through your head when it just goes. It's like, oh, my God.
In particular in winter, too, when it's
cold.
Oh, when
it's cold, too, yeah.
But anyway.
I must admit, I turned over this morning. I thought, I wonder if they'd miss me if I didn't show up.
You're going to brush this, were you?
It did cross my mind coming in about 8 o'clock.
Could you imagine the bagging you would have copped?
That wouldn't have bothered me. You know.
Yeah, right.
One thing I know about Dean, if he commits to something, this is, I'm going to give him a rap. If he commits to something, he goes through with it.
That's fair.
You
I'll
do,
take
Dean.
That as a compliment, Laurie.
Yeah, I've worked with you in the past, spoken to you about things in the past, and when you commit to something, my friend, you
what
do
I say,
it.
I'll be at the pub at midday, Laurie. I will be at the pub at midday.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Okay.
So well done for joining us.
Thank
this
you.
Morning.
Great to be here.
Back page of the paper. Not you.
Not today.
What happened?
Well, I've had...
What, was it an off day yesterday?
10 in a row.
Right.
Even Bradman got a duck, Laurie.
Right. That's all right.
Okay.
Right. I just thought...
That Manly story is...
You had an exclusive with the... Oh, well, not exclusive, but you had a story with Tony Mestroff, the new CEO of Manly.
Yes,
and
that's
we know that Manly
double
have been
sprint.
Under the pump. But you were knocked off the back page. I just can't believe that.
That's all right. It's a team sport, Laurie. You should know more about that than anybody.
I love it. You got a compliment after 5 seconds, and
yeah,
then 5 seconds
yeah,
later.
Yeah, yeah, a slap across the face a minute later. Which you never know. Yeah. You never know what you get with Laurie, do you?
Oh, you never know what you I've got a pretty good idea actually by now.
But certainly that Manly story does keep humming along, doesn't it, guys?
Well, Teamless Tuesday is
Teamless is out today. And
what did you take out of your interview with Tony Mestroff, the new CEO, yesterday?
Look, there was multiple layers of issues that we covered, but I did like the fact that they are going to look at giving Polynesian players a say and a voice at the club by potentially employing a dedicated Polynesian welfare officer, and also Manly have brought in consultants to help with cultural sensitivity. Mm. So certainly looks like Manly are learning from their mistakes.
I didn't know, but 19 of their top 30 are Polynesian players.
Second only to the Warriors.
Right.
So it will be interesting, as Mido says, at 4 o'clock today, what Des does, but you can't help but think, Loz, given the importance of Friday's game against Parramatta, that all seven would be, forgiven is the wrong word, isn't it? There would be some redemption and they would come back into the side. I can tell you, though, guys, there is divisions at Manly. Anyone who tells you there's not is telling you a fib. Oh. The players that played were dirty on the players that didn't play. Mm. They're trying to sort it out and understand each other's religious beliefs and views, but there is division there. You speak to one player and he will say, we can move forward from this, and yet you speak to others who say that this is going to take a lot longer than just one meeting.
How do you think they sort it out? Because if
there's no give.
If you've got two parties that don't agree, yes, you talk about finding some common ground, but where's the common ground in this?
There's no give, Laurie. Either side are quite staunch in their views. The players are dirty that the others didn't play, and the seven players are saying, well, we are not backing down. And they, to be fair to them, have been staunch from the beginning. They stuck together and they stuck solid through a lot of criticism. And they said, no, this is our beliefs and this is what we are doing. So they aren't going to apologise, clearly. So, as I said, Loz, I don't know how one meeting is going to fix this problem at Manly.
Yeah, it's just...
Maybe time.
Time's probably the best, but it's just an extension of, I think, our society saw that issue, because you could tell with all our texts and phone calls last week, this is one that people have an opinion on and a strong opinion on. And
everyone.
It's one way or the other.
Everyone's got an opinion on this story.
It's one way or the other. And they don't want to, no one really wants to budge on how they think or feel about it. And I'm sure that's the same within the playing group. So I'm not one bit. In fact, I said it last week. There's no way. Anyone who's played footy and you played a big game, and if your teammates don't play in that game, and I'm taking the issue away from, I'm talking about just the footy aspect of it. You're going to be dirty. You're going to be dirty on your teammates who that week don't turn up from when you're playing for a final spot. You're going to ask real questions of your teammates who you go to preseason training with 8 months ago and they're not there when you need them. That, from a purely footy sense, that is going to make anyone dirty.
There was text messages flying around last week from players to other players, certainly asking why the Seven are doing this and why aren't they playing. Josh Alloway seems to be the leader of the Seven, for want of a better term. And don't get me wrong, guys, please don't think I'm sitting here having a crack at the Seven. I'm not. If that's what they believe in, I've said it on the record multiple times in the last week, I have to respect that, and I do respect that.
Where does their season go to? Can you see them, you know, combining, coming together as a group and trying to forge their way into the semi-finals? Or do you think it'll show in their performance that they're a divided club?
Well, as they play Para on Friday, they're stranded on 20. The Raiders and Roosters are now on 22. So if they get beaten on Friday, there's only four rounds left after that. So I think that the finals have slipped by if they don't win this Friday. And then if the finals are out of reach, whether the situation might worsen, whether players look at others with harder eyes because the finals have now gone. But, Loz, if they lose to Parramatta, I don't think they can get there.
Well, it's going to be a big ask, isn't it? Then if those teams that are in front of them,
if the Raiders
win,
or Roosters win, that puts them four clear.
That puts them four clear with four games to go. It will make it extremely difficult. And then the cracks might become a little bit bigger.
100%.
And the divide is widening all the time. But I don't know how they move forward when there's such a discrepancy between both sides' feelings. Like, you got one, as Middo said, that's over here and one over there, and there's no common ground or middle ground, and yet they've got to come together and play.
It's not just the players.
And it's not one or two players either. That's the other thing.
Exactly. It's seven. It's more than half of
the starting
side.
And then you've got 19 other players within that group. Possibly a lot of those players would be supporting the Seven.
They will stick solid as well, Laurie. They will stick solid. It's not just the Seven players either, you know. It's how they're brought up. It's their traditions. It's their beliefs. It's their parents. It's their grandparents. I was speaking to a few people about it yesterday, and a lot of people don't understand how they're brought up and the strict backgrounds that they have in terms of their religion. And for others that don't have those beliefs, it's sometimes difficult to digest. But that's how they're brought up, and there's no wavering in that. There's no give, and they will stick solid, those Seven. And as Laurie said, there's every chance that 19 will stick solid. So it's a very, very awkward and difficult situation, and I just think there's more in this story. As much as it's been going on now for 9 or 10 days, I don't think it's over just yet.
Just looking at the Comm Games at the moment, we've got Emma McKeon amongst them in the women's 50-metre butterfly, and we'll keep you up to date with what's going on over there. Overnight, by the way, Kyle Chalmers won gold in the 50 metres freestyle, 47.51. He swam, so he's won a gold medal there. Kaylee McEwen, star that she is, won her second gold medal in the women's 200 metres backstroke. She came out 40 minutes later and won silver in the 200 individual medley. Now, what's Emma McKeon done there? I think she's just had a victory. Yeah, she's won the 50 fly. Emma McKeon. I'm assuming that's a final. 25.9. She swum that in. So just another gold medal, seriously. How many has she got now? 12? 12 in games history.
Is that 30 golds now on day four?
Oh, for Australia, right?
Overall.
Going for a record, are we?
Overall, we are. Well, I'm looking at the official site here. I think you're right there, doggy.
Well, as I heard you say yesterday about the, excuse me, the relevance of the Commonwealth Games.
Yeah, where are you at with it?
I'm with you. I'm enjoying it. I love seeing Australia win. I'm as patriotic as the next bloke. But I must admit the relevance, I can't quite warm to it. There's so many medals, it feels like you're not treasuring them. I'd almost rather than 30 golds at the Commonwealth, I'd rather win 6 at the Olympics, and those medals would be treasured.
Yeah, and it's hard, isn't it? Because you don't want to take anything away from the athletes, but just for me sitting here, I just know, you know, when I watch the Commonwealth Games, you know, when I was a kid growing up and even in the, you know, when I was middle age, you know, 20, 30, you watch those events and you are captured by it.
Yeah.
I just don't know where it is at the moment.
I guess the good thing about it, it helps, you know, sort of re-establish our knowledge of the athletes in the lead up to the Olympic Games. So
yeah, I suppose that's a good point.
Puts them in the news, so you're just aware that, you know, they're tracking.
Yeah, the moment. This is what they're doing.
Because Paris is only 2 years away, by the way, after we had the delayed games last year. So
yeah, and it'll come around very quickly. But well done to every athlete that's competing, because you can only beat who's in front of you. But yeah, just for me personally, I just haven't got that same up and about feeling about the Commonwealth
Games. We used
games.
To, though. Certainly when I was growing up, Loz,
yeah.
I remember it, going back to 1982 at Brisbane. We had the Commonwealth Games up there, and it was amazing time for Australia. But it just seems to have lost a little bit over the years. Even the actual Commonwealth Games overall, I mean, I thought by now maybe it might not have been around.
Mm.
And I say that respectfully, because every athlete that's been there or is there right now has worked their absolute backsides off to be there. And the joy and the scenes that we're seeing are wonderful. But I think the Olympics is something that I really warm to. And every medal is treasured. And you become a legend if you win an Olympic medal. You are written into the folklore. And you become an iconic figure in Australian sport. But there's just so many goals at the Commonwealth Games, and we dominate so much, it's hard to sort of remember who's won what. I mean, we're on day four now. We've already won 30 gold medals.
Yeah.
I mean, good luck to us. It's great. But it's hard to keep up, isn't it? Mm.
Back pages of the papers today. Stop sign, the headline on the back of the Telegraph. NRL to end deadline day madness. Para fails in late bid for Clemmer. Back page of the Herald. Killing tribalism. NRL boss blasts player trades. And that's Raiders chief executive Don Furner talking about, well, what's going on with these late season transfers. But Peter Volandis has spoken to Buzz and says that he wants to go back to June 30. A June 30 cutoff, saying you don't want clubs trying to buy a premiership late in the year. And, you know, I think we were speaking about this yesterday. It served its purpose as far as COVID and the difficulties that raised. But to have these transfers a month out from the finals, that doesn't sit well with me and a lot of fans. And I think June 30 is about right.
Yeah, well, I think the fans don't like the fact that you can have a player that could possibly play for two or three clubs in one season. And then you get 5 weeks out from a semi-final series. And players, if you've got a spot on your list, get a player in to try and help you win a competition. But I also didn't mind the theory of it with COVID, but also, as Melbourne have done, they've run into a bit of trouble with outside backs, and they've got one spot left on their roster. So I didn't mind the fact that they could go and source another player, because they'd lost a lot of players.
But isn't it up to them to get that depth initially, Loz, to cover for those things? And I'm not picking out Melbourne per se here.
That's the rule.
Mm. But I'm saying, shouldn't they have got the depth initially in their squad to cover for those? Not just think, okay, we've got some injuries, let's go raid someone else.
Well, you could have the same argument for June 30.
It's not as late in the season, though.
No, it's not as late, but what's the difference between late and then at the end?
Mm. I don't like the lateness.
Yeah, but you could have a lot of injuries early in the season, so you're desperate then to go and get someone. So you go earlier. It just so happens that they've got them at the back end of the season. And I think if you can prove that you've got four or five guys in your squad in that one position that are out, I didn't mind it. But I'm happy to go back to June 30. It doesn't worry me. I'm just saying you are going to get times or have times where, you know, you're going to run into a lot of injury problems, and you may well need that August 1 trade deadline. But if they change it, it's certainly not going to worry me. You're just going to have to fill your roster up by June 30.
It's the world we live in, isn't it, Mino?
Yeah, it is. But it's not the Raiders, the Titans, the Tigers going and trying to get these plays late in the season. It's the Roosters and the Melbourne Storm trying to,
you know. But what I would say, if the rule was still in place and those clubs were fighting for finals and top four and a chance of winning a comp, you don't think they would do it?
Well, that's the whole point.
They would do it.
Want to see clubs this late in the season try and...
Yeah, I know, but clubs can say what they want at the moment because it doesn't affect them. It affects other clubs. But if they're in the same situation, they're going after the players to strengthen their roster for the end of the season. And I know what you're saying. No one likes it. No one wants to see it. But for clubs to say at the moment that, it shouldn't be happening, if they're in the same situation as Melbourne...
They'd cannibalise the team next door.
They'd do the same. Hmm. It just depends what rule suits you at the time.
I reckon it's one of the rules that the fans really hate. I think it upsets a lot of fans when you can have, as you say, Loz, you can have two or three clubs in 1 year. Look, call me a dinosaur, but going back to your era, Laurie, you would never consider moving mid-season. And times change, and as I said, Middo, it's the world we live in. But I think of all the issues in rugby league that we don't like or want change, I reckon this is right up there in terms of fan dislike.
Well, you imagine if you're a Tigers supporter, and you're a David Nofaluma fan, and you see him go to Melbourne, and then all of a sudden he's back in your colours next season. As a young boy, you're sitting there going, how does that work? How does that operate? I thought he was a Tigers player. Now we see him with Melbourne, then he's going to be back with the Tigers next year.
Just on Clemmer too, guys, I was told last night that the deal with Parramatta wouldn't go through, which is what Buzz has written. His family loves Newcastle. They want to settle there after retirement, and they have bought a home up there. So I think Clemmer will be in Newcastle well into
just
retirement.
Just on with Clemmer and Marty Tapau, the possible link to Parramatta, was that as a loan deal for this year only, or was it a deal for the remaining games this season and a 12-month, two-year contract the following years?
Yes, that's how I understand it, because he's actually off contract this year, Marty. So Marty went to Manly saying, look, you haven't offered me a new deal. If I can go to Parramatta, I can play the rest of the year there and then get another year out of my career. But I spoke to Manly about this, and they're saying, well, we get that, Marty, but we need you, and you've got a contract here. We can't let one of our best middle forwards just walk out the door so you can get another contract.
Don't you love it? Because you hear these stories all the time, but it's always right for the clubs to get rid of players when they want to.
Goes both ways.
And I don't know how you fix that. I don't know. A contract should be a contract, but it never is. Well, you always have a club at some stage wanting to get rid of a player, and they'll say it's in the best interest of the player and the best interest of the club. But then when a player wants to do it, there's a bit of resistance at times.
I get Manly's stance on this. I wouldn't be letting a bloke walk out the door now so he can get another contract. That's up to the player and his manager to sort out, not the existing club who's got a binding contract.
And there's still a chance of playing finals football.
Correct.
You know, if they got beaten this weekend and the deadline was pushed back further, Manly might, well, grant him a release. But they're pressing for a finals berth. They want all their players available. So I understand both parties, but I just have a bit of a chuckle to myself when you hear the old, we can't do this. I'm not going to release a player. And then 2 weeks later, they'll release a player because he's done something wrong and they want to get rid of him and they want to free up some salary cap space.
Are you suggesting clubs change their narrative, Laurie, depending on the situation?
Of course I do. Of course I do.
Now, Bulldog just during the news break then goes, I need to pump my tyres up. Had a long pause.
Before, not emotionally. You mean physically?
No.
As in a vehicle?
I thought it was emotional.
No. I've got a little trip on Friday and my tyres don't look real good. I drive a RAV4. So I said to Laurie, with his mechanical background, what should the tyre pressure be? Because I've got no idea. He says 36. I said, yep, 36. So we just Googled it, 32. So I would have had tyre. Remember in Jaws when the shark blew up and there was stuff everywhere? That would have been my tyre.
I sounded confident.
You did, didn't you? You said it with a lot of authority.
Yeah, well, that's what you
wrong.
Do. Mate.
So it's 32.
Mate, when you say something confidently, all right, people will believe you.
It's like in the office. Walk fast with a bit of paper in your hand. People always think you're busy.
I'm filthy, you're good.
So anyway,
but anyway,
32.
32.
What about your car? What are you reckon?
I'll be 35, 36.
30, right, okay. Good luck with that. If you want a lift, I'll pick you up.
Why did you Google? Google stuffed everything.
Because I don't... Exactly. I like to go to the source. Yeah. I don't like Dr. Google or Mechanic Google.
So anyway, is there anyone out there that knows the correct tyre pressure for a RAV4?
Tyre pressure.
Yeah. Because they might be just making that up on Google too.
Well, if it's 36 and we get it from a mechanic on the open line or text line, I will issue you a public apology, Mr. Daly.
Where'd you say you're going?
Just going away for a day.
Going, oh, okay, right.
On Friday.
Gotcha. Beautiful.
So, okay, there you go. We think it's 32. You're close, yeah.
13-53-53 is the number, 0419-767-272 on the text line. Now, we didn't get to this on the back page of the Telegraph today. Sheens wants more for less. This is in regards to Luke Brooks. So the Tigers, or Tim Sheens, shows no signs of giving up Luke Brooks, telling News Corp he's contracted next year and it's expected he'll be there at pre-season training. Sheen says he likes Brooks. He wants him in the side. He conceded they'd prefer he was on less money, but they could extend his contract as well. Newcastle have been linked to Luke Brooks and a move there, but sounds like he's going nowhere, Lots.
Well, one thing I know about Sheensy is that he wants to play an attacking style of footy next year. And I think one of the reasons why he was so keen to keep Brooks and Dewey in the halves and have Hastings at 13 was that ball playing option. And with Appy Korosau going to the club next year, all of a sudden they've got a few guys that can use the ball. And I think you'll see a Tigers playing a real exciting brand of football. And I think that, you know, Sheensy, if he wants Luke Brooks, then Luke Brooks will stay.
Were you a bit surprised that Sheens came out and said, we would like to have him for less money?
Speaking the truth, isn't it? Mm.
I just wonder how Brooksy might have taken that.
Oh, look, I don't think it...
I don't think Sheensy meant any sinister by it.
No. Oh, I'm just trying to think what you would think as a player. Yeah, I think you'd be a bit taken aback by it. But I think being a realist, you go, well, yeah, possibly I am getting overpaid here. You know, is he worth over $1 million?
No.
If he was off the open market, what would he attract? And I think that deep down, he probably realises that he's got the deal of a lifetime. And he's
good luck to him.
You know, way over the odds. So good on him. And, you know, they're just sort of saying that, yep, you'd like to have Luke Brooks in your team. Is he getting paid too much? Yep. But are we going to work with him? Yes, we are.
Our listeners know all, Bulldog.
What have we got, boys?
They know all.
Yeah.
Rod from Foster, it's displayed on your tyres, Bulldog.
Didn't see that, Rod. It's the one place I didn't look.
Tyre pressure on the inside of your front doors, you idiot.
Jerks from Newcastle, inside of your front door. There's a sticker inside your door with recommended tyre pressures, says Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
They keep coming. So there
Brett from Richmond, tyre pressure will be in your owner's manual. You know what an owner's manual is?
I don't think I've got one of those. Mm.
Depends on the weight of the vehicle carries. I suspect the Bullfrog car would need a bit more pressure.
Polly, how do I know what the weight of the vehicle is?
Oh, dear. Oh,
just go into one of those, like, RTA truck zones where they...
That's fine.
Mate, what about the support you've got here, Bulldog? Yeah. People are listening. They want to make sure that your car is in the right shape,
condition.
You've got the right tyre pressure.
Of all the places I looked for the tyre pressure, I didn't look on the tyre itself, which might have been an error.
Inside
the tyre?
In the door.
Okay.
Inside of the front door.
Right. Well, I'll be ringing you guys if my tyres deflate on my journey, and you can come and pick me up.
Right. What happens if you just go over a touch? See, I know you can't go from 32 to 38, 40. What if you went from 32 to 34?
Boom.
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 What, you're just driving down the highway and boom?
Well, I assume so. It's like anything. It's like a balloon.
Yeah, but that's only the recommended tyre.
If you blow
pressure.
A balloon up past its point of braking, it's going to pop. And I imagine a tyre would be the same, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but that's going way over and above.
Right, okay.
I said from 32 to 38, 40 pressure. But if you go from 32 to 34 pressure...
I don't even want to bring up the fact I probably need some water in the radiator.
When was the last time you put water in?
I just take it to our man, Booker and Sudsy, and they look after me over there.
Well, Booker and Sudsy wouldn't know what to do. Well, Booker would, but Sudsy wouldn't.
Over there at Toyota, where is it?
Ferguson's.
Ferguson's Toyota. I pay for my cars over there. Not sure about the bike next to me, but anyway.
Very, very good people, Dean.
They very good.
They do. Good sponsors.
Yeah.
Great sponsors. What are you looking at?
No, I'm just surprised you haven't put this, now that you're a big Instagram user, you haven't put
I haven't got enough Instagram supporters, followers.
How many have you got?
Oh, sure. You'd have a few, wouldn't you? I've got about...
I'll find out for you.
How many have I got? I think last time I had a look, there was about 4,000 or 5,000. 5,000, I think.
He popped up again the other night. He was at an establishment.
I need to get up to about 10 before I'm an official
influencer.
Yeah.
Here we go.
You're a player.
Will you follow me? Do you follow me?
I'm not on Instagram. I don't know why. I just never got around to it.
On Twitter.
I'm on Twitter and Facebook.
You know, on Twitter?
Yep.
How often do you tweet?
Once or twice a day, but I use that mostly for stories.
Right. Do you just tweet what you're about to write?
No. What they'll do is I'll write a story and then it'll go up on the website.
Yep.
And you can go and click on that story and that will then go on to Twitter, which does help your online traffic.
Right.
So the more Twitter followers you get, obviously, the more people you hope would read your story.
Yep.
So my Twitter followers have built up over years.
But you can be a, you know how they have an Instagram influencer? Can you be a Twitter influencer?
I don't think people care what I think.
Right.
5,262.
There you go.
Is how many he's got.
Mate, I'm building. Yeah.
So you've got to have a nice solid foundation. It's always a slow process.
Can you imagine if you're on Instagram and you were still coaching the Blues?
What's that?
Can you imagine if you were still coaching?
Yeah, why?
They're ruthless.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't.
Jason Demetriou's on Twitter, and I said I'll give it 6 months and you'll be off, but he's still on there.
How do you engage with them?
That's brave as a head coach.
It is. As a head coach, that is courageous, because Twitter is a sewer.
How do you cope with it?
I get a lot of it on Twitter.
If you're rating it positive feedback, negative feedback, where does it sit? Does it depend on the story?
Depends on the story. Mostly negative.
Right.
It doesn't bother me because I've got a thick skin after 35 years. But some of the comments are pretty nasty.
Right, do you report them?
Nah, I can't be bothered. You know what? If you reply, it just gives them what they want. So I just generally ignore. Or if it gets bad, I just block them.
Mm. Buzz engages quite a lot.
He does. And I often think, Buzz, what are you doing? You know, but he loves it.
Yeah.
But Buzz loves that argy-bargy.
Yeah.
It's almost like he puts stuff up there he knows is going to be provocative.
Mm.
He said a tweet about Nick Kyrgios, what time is the tennis final on tonight in Wimbledon because I want to be in bed by then, knowing full well that it was going to go boom, which it did.
Yeah.
But he just sits back. He loves it. Mm. Mm. He loves it.
Now, Nelson Asofa Solomona, fellas, there's been quite some reaction to this. And yesterday we debated this. What are you laughing at there?
32 when the tyres are cold, Bulldog. It must be a very old car if you need to put water in it. Cars use coolant these days.
Well, there you go. That's why it won't start, Steve. I keep putting water in.
Where was the one about the hot pink RAV4?
What about Steve? It's not like a balloon. Have you survived this long?
I used to respect you, Bulldog. You have just confirmed yourself to another dill.
Dill journo. Not very nice, Steve. I've got feelings too, you know.
Now, the match review committee felt there was insufficient evidence to charge Nelson Asofa Solomona after that slam on Wade Egan's face and jaw there on Friday night. And yesterday, Graeme Annesley said that, you know, they identified there was an extra player contributing to the force of the tackle. So it was two big men on a smaller man. In fact, that was Luke Patton, who's on the match review committee, saying that in a recorded video. Which was part of Graeme Annesley's weekly update there yesterday. But a lot of people unhappy about this, the fact that Big Nelson didn't suffer a penalty for that on Friday night when we're looking at some of the other penalties that have gone around over the weekend as well.
Yeah, I thought it was a suspension. I thought that was a stance that they could have taken just to eradicate. But it was a cheap shot, wasn't it? Let's be honest.
Yeah, I thought
a good old-fashioned cheap shot.
I thought he should have spent some time on the sideline.
I thought, and I love Jared Warrior Hargreaves. He's a throwback to me, Loz. I love those old-style props. They've got a bit of meanness and menace about him. But that one on Zach Fulton, that was another cheap shot. And I think Jared would be disappointed in himself. And I thought he could have spent a week on the sidelines.
But you know exactly... you know Bozo very well. You knew Bozo very well, like we all did. How proud of you reckon he would have been last Thursday night watching young Zach run out there and just handle it the way he did, because I thought he played well for a 20-year-old kid and for, you know, that old bull taking on young Zach and giving it to him, and Zach gave as good as he got. I thought that was great. And I reckon, knowing Bozo very well, he would have been sitting there proud in the stands.
Yeah, he would have been immensely proud, wouldn't he, Loz? I was told that Zach gave a bit of lip in that Fulton mode.
Yeah.
Always very assured themselves, the Fultons. And I think that, Zach gave a more than what he got, I think.
Yeah.
And I think it got under Jared's skin. And if that's what Zach set out to do, it worked. It worked. But I thought he was very good. I thought he was aggressive. And he looked like a player that had been there for a couple of years. And, gee, I reckon he's got a future.
Well, I didn't know what to expect. I probably assumed that he was going to be more sort of the flashy bozo-type player. But he was more the kid that's, you know, got a bit of grunt in him, carry the ball strongly, aggressive in defence, and got a high work rate. So, and for a 20-year-old boy, I thought he handled it extremely well.
Did I read that it's the first time in that three generations had played? So you obviously got Bob, and then you got Brett and Scott, and now you've got young Zach, who is, of course, the son of Scott, who Brett coached through the juniors. Yeah. So it's a real Fulton influence down there. And you know what? I love the history of the game. I love the fact that Zach's come through, and I love the fact when you see the sons of legends that you grew up with, it gives you a bit of a nice old warm feeling, doesn't it?
Did I see he said something to the tune of, maybe it's time to retire?
Apparently, yeah.
I love that. First game, you've come out of it. He hasn't even played New South Wales Cup, has he, Zach Fulton?
No.
Comes out, plays first grade.
Special.
It isn't.
That's a bozo special.
Time to retire to one of the toughest players of the last 10 years.
I see it full time too. Jared went for him and Zach sort of moved away and Jared half grabbed him as if to say, come back here, young kid.
Yeah.
But he's a Fulton.
Yeah. It just reminded you of some of those, you know, the older days where you could have that sort of one-on-one argy-bargy with a, you know, another front rower going at each other. And we spoke about it with Blocker on the Friday, you know, when he first came into grade. But, you know, the old front rowers would take him on and headbutt him in scrums and give him a
It was an initiation,
bit of
wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, they survived.
And if you handle it, you got the respect then
of
the players. But if you didn't, they knew to come at you harder.
What do you think would have happened if it was Blocker in his heyday, Loz? A young prop first game said to Blocker in, say, 1992.
You would have had to... You would have had to try and tilt Blocker because the eyes would be spinning and you'd be going, block, 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 calm down. But Block would, he'd lose his marbles, old Block. He had a short temper. There wasn't too much that Block wouldn't have done to try and get under the skin of an opponent. I don't know what I'm dealing with here. You blokes are hopeless. Don't you know anything about cars?
Well,
I'm not a handyman.
We'll
Mido just asked. We're talking about tyre pressure. And he goes, whereabouts on the inside of the door is it?
Guess where? Inside of the door.
Well, that's the first thing I'm going to be doing when I go to my car after the show. Well, I can't.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you listen to this program, we have two guys that I thought were very intelligent.
And this coming from this bloke.
Well, I'm a journalist. I'm not a mechanic.
Can't change a light bulb.
Well, I can't. But I admit that.
Well, what do
you
think
You blokes carry on as if you know everything about everything.
How am I carrying on? I've actually gone to the punters to find out.
Well, Mido over there was laughing different. And bagging at you, and then he goes, where did I find it on the inside?
Yeah,
of the
I just
door?
Needed a cheap laugh to get me up
this morning. That'll do me.
You know, I went to the shops last week, last story. Mm. I drove to the shops, and I'm getting older and sillier. Mm. Did my shopping, walked home, and I thought, some bugger's knocked off my bloody car. And I thought, oh, jeez.
You know what? You are getting old and silly because you told that story last week.
I did not.
You did.
I did not.
You did.
100%.
Oh,
you did.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you did.
I'm worried about him now.
I am worried about you. Are you serious? You just told that story again?
I thought it was in the Sunday show.
Give us a call, 13 53 53. We've got John. G'day, John. How are you, mate?
G'day, fellas. How are you going?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. What do you got for us this morning?
I have been enjoying the Commonwealth Games, fellas. It's been great, actually. I've competed in a couple of them, fortunately, and it's great to see it. It's a great privilege for a lot of people there, and I can tell you when you're playing in those countries, mate, the welcome that you get there is extraordinary and something you never forget, boys.
What did you do, John?
Lawn bowls, mate.
Oh, beautiful. Good on you.
I was born in Malta, and I took up the sport about 30 years ago and was fortunate to represent my nation of birth a couple of times, and it was a extremely humbling experience, Laurie. Actually.
I could imagine, mate. I could imagine.
Yeah. Fantastic, mate. Absolutely fantastic.
You still playing today?
Occasionally, mate. Not as much as I used to.
Yeah.
Put it that way.
Oh, yep. Beautiful.
Where do you play, John?
I'm at Wingham.
Wingham?
Yep.
Just a local bowling club up there?
Just a local bowling club, fellas. After that, I just wanted to enjoy it, and it's great.
I'll tell, you what you could do, John. Don't tell anyone you've played, you know, represented Mulder and went to a Commonwealth game.
They all know.
Yeah, oh, dude, I was going to say, mate, just take him on for a bit of money.
He walks around with his Mulder shirt on.
They probably look at me now and say, how did this bloke play in the Commonwealth game?
good stuff, mate. What do you got for us?
Mate, I was just been looking at that tackle a few times on Jackson Hastings on the weekend. The more I look at it, why did the referee not call held sooner? And that is something that's creeping into the game. You could clearly see Jackson Hastings was not going to progress. He was not going to release the ball. And that allowed Carrigan to come in. The length of time that the referee allowed him to be held allowed Carrigan to come in as third man. This is probably something that referees... And it's in turn, could it be that the rise of this type of tackle is because we don't have the second referee policing the rucks as much as we did when we had the two referees.
Yeah, well, I think Mido raised this point yesterday. And did you say that Andrew John said something similar about when momentum was stopped?
Yes, he did on the Footy Show on Sunday. And he was talking especially about the tackle on Tarpany, in fact.
Yeah.
Yeah, because very much the motion had stopped it. It was pretty similar in the Hastings-Carrigan incident as well. Andrew Johns was saying when momentum stopped in the tackle, that third man in should not be allowed.
Yeah, and that's a fair point. But the only thing I would say is, as a referee, sometimes if they're upright and no one is at the legs, some of them can sort of stop and get the defender to relax, and then they go again. And guys like Joe Tarpany with good leg strength can push through. So at times you may think that they're slowing down in the tackle and it's going to stop the momentum, but then they surge again. That's the only thing that I would think that the referees would be worried about, and then calling a stop to play too early. But these type of tackles, I don't think anyone enjoys seeing. Mm. And after watching Hastings on the weekend suffer that injury, which is, you know, his season is now over, I think as a Tigers supporter, you'd be frustrated with that. Carrigan, though, two things in his favour. One, when he goes in, he doesn't do it with a great deal of force, but he does put his body weight down. So the fact that he doesn't go in with a lot of force may help him. And the other one is that the body is bent back over his legs. So they could argue that that was mitigating circumstances as well. But he will at least find himself on the sideline, I would expect, for at least a month, if not a lot more.
Sorry, Mido. It's a bad tackle that's come into the game. Mm-hmm. I don't like those tackles. They make me wince. Mm-hmm. And not much on a footy field
makes me
wince.
Can I ask you, though, how do you stop it? What do you do?
I don't know, Laurie. I don't know.
How do you tell someone, and we had this discussion off air, you're telling someone, like, you can't go near the head, you can't go over the shoulder, but, you know, how do you go about going in at the legs? And then, is it you can't go in aggressive? Is it just you've got to go in and just get one leg off the... I don't know. How do you police going in at the legs?
There's no remedy at the moment, Loz. You're spot on. But when two blokes hold a bloke up and a third one hits that legs on an angle with force... Yet the irony is, as kids, we're always told tackle around the legs. Mm. So, you know, it's supposed to be a copybook tackle. But when you look at it, that one on the weekend, that was horrible. Yeah.
If you can't go around the legs, all right, and this is just an example of just thinking out aloud. Remember the old days, you would remember this. So Bulldogs and Souths were very good at it. They would open the body up for a body shot. So they'd keep you upright. So if you're not allowed to tackle around the legs, you'd have two coming in upright, holding you, and they'd leave a little bit of space. And then that third bloke would come in, straight in at your ribs.
Ouch.
And they would sort of jam you in there, and that hurt. And that would cause a lot of damage as well. So if you're changing the rule of not going downstairs, you might open itself up for a dangerous tackle in around your ribs. So, I just don't know. I don't like the tackle. I don't like the hip drop tackle. But I'm just wondering how we try and eliminate it and how we go about making the tackles safe.
Well, this morning's sports update comes straight from the UK. And Jamie Rogers, JR, how are you?
Morning, guys. It's good to talk to you from over here in the UK. It's 9:40 at night and all going really well. The sun's been shining. It's actually really hot. You should see how sunburnt I got today just doing a short swim at Dover early in the morning. But no, all good.
Run me through it, JR. When is the swim going to take place?
So I'm not 100% sure yet, Loz. I'm meeting with my pilot tomorrow. Tomorrow's meant to be a bad day. So he contacted me and said, come and chat to me and we'll work out when your window will likely be. But other than tomorrow, the weather has been fantastic and looks like it's going to be great moving forward as well. So hopefully I'm early in my window and sometime this week, which would be great because I actually walked along the white cliffs of Dover today and you can see Calais, you can see France. And I tell you what, boys, it actually is like this little speck on the coastline as you stand there looking across over the English Channel. So I just want to get in there and go and do it. So I'll have a bit more of an idea tomorrow.
Ah, right. So I was going to ask you then, with the conditions, is the water warm and are you expecting it to be quite flat or choppy?
So it's been about 18 degrees, the water. So I had my first swim today. I just went just to have a feel of the water because, as you guys know, I've been sick. So I haven't been in the water for the past week. So I went into Dover. The water was like really milky. It was almost like you literally were swimming in milk with like a taste of petrol in it. It was very strange.
Delightful.
But warmish, which was nice. And it was pretty flat. And if this wind can stay low, then hopefully the conditions will be nice and flat for most of the way, but if there is big waves, I've trained for that, so I'm hopefully prepared for everything that the channel can throw at me.
And how are you feeling now, JR, after you were a bit crook last week?
Yeah, so still not 100%, which is really annoying, because you know that's when things can start to play with your mind, that you know you're not completely as healthy as you would want to be, but the plus is it's Monday night here in the UK, so I've still got a few more days to really get myself better. But look, if I have to swim on Wednesday or Thursday, I will definitely be fine to go and I'm not going to let this virus get in the way. I'm still on my antibiotics. So all will be fine, boys.
Jamie, you've done the work physically. Clearly, you've been training for ages and you're no doubt in peak physical condition. But how do you prepare for the mental battle which lies ahead?
Yeah, it's a good question, Bulldog. I think when I've been doing my training, I've gone through like to really dark places and, you know, when I've done 8-hour swims and 6-hour swims and getting yourself out of those is perfect preparation for what I'm about to go to. I don't think I've actually experienced as dark as what it can be when I go and do the channel, but I've had to get myself out of so many tough situations mentally. And it's just going to be talking to myself and trying to stay as positive as I can. I've got my boys' faces on water bottles. And my physio put their names on bracelets, which I'm going to wear in the water as well. So I think when times are getting tough, I've got those things to look at and also just remind myself why I'm doing it with Got You For Life. And I've spoken to so many of our listeners and people about what Got You For Life means to them. So just thinking about all of that stuff will definitely help me get out of the tough time.
And have you met all the crew and things like that yet?
So I've met some. You know what's really cool about Dover? I mean, no one would actually probably go there unless you're going to swim the English Channel or you're getting onto a cruise. But at this time of year, it's just full of swimmers from all around the world that are all coming to try and conquer the English Channel. So while you're out there swimming, you stop and talk to all different swimmers and what their experience has been so far. But I've got my friend is here and then my other support arrives tomorrow. And then we'll meet the pilot tomorrow as well as the English Channel Association official and the medic. So we'll all start coming together tomorrow.
So how many swim at the one time?
Oh, just one.
So you swim and then what, someone goes a couple of hours after you or something like that?
Yeah, so how it works is with the English Channel Association, there's 5 accredited pilots. So that means there's 5 boats out at any one time. But just one swimmer. Some groups are in a relay because you could do the channel if you wanted in a 6-person relay or like me where you do it by yourself. So my pilot has 5 swimmers in my tide, which means, so I'm swimmer 3, so I've got to wait for 2 other people to finish it before me, and then I can go.
Okay.
Lots of people that are doing it, but only 1 in 5 will finish.
Okay, JR, well, keep us posted with when you're attacking it. Thanks so much. Go and rest well, and we'll chat soon.
Thanks, guys. Speak to you soon.
Thank you.
JR there, getting ready to swim the channel.
She's very confident, though, JR, isn't she? She's done all the work, so she should be confident. And I reckon she'll smash it. I really do. Because she's quite a determined, well, we know she's a determined girl, you know, and she set it to mind to something and she achieves it. But, you know, with all the hard work that she's put in, and, you know, some days she's come in here and it's been terrible weather outside, but she'll go and swim in the ocean for 6 or 7 hours. I don't know. I don't know whether everyone has been as diligent as her when they attempt the English Channel, but there'd be no better prepared person than JR. She's amazing in what she's been able to do. And I think the background in swimming has helped her as well. You know, the fact that she was close to being an Olympian and that type of stuff, and she swam all her life, I think that'll hold her in good stead as well.
You know what would be daunting? You've done all the work, so she's ready to go physically and mentally, but still, when that call comes, you're up next. Then it's real. This is the moment I've been.
Well, the butterflies
for,
will be there.
It would be incredibly confronting.
Oh yeah, and you think about this is what happens in sport as well, is that you can overthink it, and for some reason, you use up a lot of energy before you actually get to the contest. So she's got to try and stay nice and calm and nice and relaxed. But you know the butterflies will be burning and churning inside, and you just hope they haven't, you know, used up all that energy, because sometimes you'll be in a swim or in a game and you just hit the wall and you don't know why you've hit the wall, but a lot of it's to do with the fact that you've overthought things and, you know, you've drained yourself in the lead up to whatever event you're participating in. But knowing JR and knowing how mentally strong she is, I think she'll be right. I think she'll get herself in that mindset. She's pretty determined. And I reckon she'll do well. I reckon she'll swim quicker than what she thinks.
Big Sports Breakfast Countdown. Coming up with the Lozster. What have you got for us today, Loz?
Come on, Loz. Fire up.
What do you reckon, Bulldog? What do you reckon the topic will be today?
Most underrated players.
Good guess.
There you go.
Good guess. Now, most underrated players.
This year.
I think this year. And I think a lot of players that we had in at the start of the year when we sort of spoke about underrated players are no longer underrated. One of those players was Isaiah Young, you know, but he's more than an underrated player now. He's a superstar and very important to Penrith's push for back-to-back premierships. So I'm going to go through a couple here now. Reece Robson, hooker from the Cowboys. Geez, he's impressed me this year. He's got good speed out of dummy half. He's got good deception. He's got a good pass. He likes to engage markers, puts his forwards over the advantage line. And he just knows when to run. And he gives good service. And he's been one of the reasons why the Cowboys have had a big impact on the competition this year. You know, I know we speak of a lot of other players in this Cowboys side that have made an impact. You know, the Drinkwaters at the back and Dearden. Nenai have been given opportunities in, you know, Origin and handled themselves well. But Reece Robson, I think he's proved himself to be a wonderful number 9, and he's had a fantastic year. Will Kennedy, fullback for the Sharks, been very impressive. Great hands. I think he's got great vision. He's learning and understanding of the game. He's getting stronger. He nails most chances when he sees them. He can play long sides, but he also can go down a short side. He's got good catch pass, and he's very safe under a high ball, which you need from a fullback. So I think he's underrated, and in fact, he's going to be missing.
Yeah, he's out. He had surgery
for the
yesterday.
Next 4 or 5 weeks. So that's a big blow to the Sharks, but I think he's been outstanding this year. Another fullback, and he stepped into this position, has been Reuben Garrick. You know, he's played on the wing for Manly. Tom Turbo went down. Reuben Garrick has stepped into the role. Looks as though he communicates really well with his team in defence, organises that defensive system well. He returns the ball strongly, and I think he's got more comfortable in that role. as the season has gone on. And I think that, you know, he's a guy that's improved. He's a goal kicker, gets heavily involved, and I really like what he's done for Manly this season. I don't know whether this player is underrated anymore, but I thought I'd just throw him in, and it's not because he's a Raider player. He's a Raiders player, but I think Hudson Young is sort of now starting to elevate himself to that next level. Tough, aggressive. He's a line breaker. He's a try scorer. And he can roll up the sleeves and do that tough carry. And there's always something happening in and around him, whether it's a bit of push and a shove, or whether it's a tackle, or whether it's a try. But he's got all the ability in the world.
See that flick pass last week, Loz?
Yeah, well, he flicked pass.
So he's got
also
a bit of skill
got
as well, hasn't
that,
he?
I can't remember what game it was, but he scored at the death with a grubber kick.
Yeah.
And it was early in the tackle count. And I remember watching the game and I was screaming at the television going, why did you kick that? And then it was like, well done.
Champion.
Great effort. but, yeah, I think he's a really good player. And the other one is Sam Verrills. I like what he does for the Roosters. And I know they've brought Brendan Smith next season. And Verrills is on his way out. And we're unsure of where he's going to go. But he gets through plenty of work in defence. His passing is nice and crisp out of dummy half. Again, he knows when to run. He's a good support player. He hunts through the middle like a good hooker. And he's got a good combination with his halves. And I think since he's been back in the team, I think the Roosters have improved. So there's sort of five guys that I've picked out that I reckon are underrated, but I'm sure they wouldn't be underrated with their teammates.
Couple of additions on the text line, 0419 767 272, by the way. Connor Tracy.
Good player.
I bet that's Rod from Nowra has probably sent that, but Connor Tracy sort of plugs gaps wherever they're needed, doesn't he, there at the Sharks, whenever there's an injury played on the wing on the weekend. Max King for the Bulldogs. Most people probably still ask who. Been one of our best forwards all year, probably on about 200,000, says Simon the Pieman. Sending that one through. So a couple of your nominations there. But Loz came up with, for the most underrated players this season, Reece Robson from the Cowboys, Reuben Garrick from Manly, Will Kennedy, the Sharks, Hudson Young, the Raiders, and Sam Verrills from the Roosters. Are you happy with that list, Doggy?
Great list. A lot of research, a lot of time. He was up all hours last night getting that one together. Well done, Loz.
Thank you, Bulldog.
No worries.
Thank you very much for your support.
Yeah, no, I'll be following that up with a story in tomorrow's Telegraph. Not. Anyway.
Anyway, time to move on. We're going to move on to.
Well, 6:55.
Very special guest. Now, do you want to introduce the next guest, Bulldog?
Yeah, Adam Pengilly, are you there?
He's not there yet. He's about to be.
No. Because I want to ask him something when he does come on. A pertinent question.
Okay.
Mm. I love that when you say pertinent.
Yes.
Can you tell me what it means?
Important.
Right.
Relevant.
Pertinent.
Adam Pengilly, you're there.
Morning, boys. How are you going?
Yeah, good morning. Got a question for you.
Yes.
The producer just came in.
Oh, my gee.
Said Adam will be ready at 6:55. So let me say this to you, Mr. Pengilly. You're ready when we tell you, not when you want to come on.
Okay? I'm trying to change a light bulb. Sorry, buddy.
Sounds like pumping up a tyre.
How many people did you need to change it?
Listen, I'm about as hopeless as you guys with doing stuff around the house. Like, you know, those people who just have no idea how to do anything?
Yep.
That's me. That's me. But me, though, I know how to put pressure in a tyre. I don't need to open the door.
Righto. What's your tyre pressure for your car?
32. Okay. Well, that's what it should be, isn't it? Isn't that the number?
Well,
no,
depending on what
all.
Car you have.
Well, I've always been taught by my father it should be around that 32 mark.
Well, Laurie's got a, I think it's a Kluger. It's 35, 36.
35, 36 was, okay, 100%. Fair enough.
That's what Google said.
Give on the edge, Loz. Put 40 in, see how it goes.
Well, it'll be a bumpy ride.
My little Mazda runs around at 32 tyre pressure, so that's all right. You should check that at some stage, though. I haven't done it for a while.
Well, we're just glad that you're good enough to come on at 6:55. Thanks,
sorry,
Adam.
Boys,
hang on. Cut him some slack. It was his birthday yesterday.
Happy birthday.
Yes, thank you, boys. Thank you. Yeah,
how old?
A little bit older. 37, yesterday.
Did you run all the way?
Yeah. Actually, how funny is it that my birthday, they say truth is stranger than fiction. My birthday's on the horse's birthday.
That it is.
And speaking of horses, I hope you had a good day, by the way, mate. And sorry we weren't informed of your birthday yesterday. We'll have to blame someone for that, Lots.
Was Jono's birthday yesterday as well?
Was too.
So you're the same birthday as Jono.
That's a good day. Jono must be a good man. He is a good man.
Well, as on the horses, you've got trials going on. There's some good horses going around this morning in the trials.
Yeah, can't wait to see Fangirl this morning, Jared. She's the headline act at Randwick this morning for the trials, and fascinated to see what Chris Waller does with her, this preparation, what sort of race he tries to target. I think he's used a race like the Epsom as a really good launching pad for his sort of, I suppose, four-year-old mares coming out of their three-year-old season. We've seen that with Winx in the past, so she's definitely one of the headline acts there this morning in the Congos going around, as well as Converge, who won the Randwick Guineas, and then we'll see a couple of other horses later in the morning as well that were trials, sort of starting off their three-year-old campaigns too. So very keen to see how a few of these horses trial this morning. It's that time of year, isn't it, where we sort of focus a lot on the trials heading towards the big spring race. It'll be around the corner in a couple of weeks' time.
We saw a couple of jockeys about a month ago, mate, suffer some serious falls. What's the latest update with them?
Yeah, Loz, we haven't spoken about them for a little bit, but some really good news with Alyssa Meredith, who's starting to walk a little bit more and eating on her own, was the last report that came out of Racing New South Wales yesterday. So it's going to be a very long road to recovery, but from all reports, she's coming along slowly and starting to make some really nice progress. And Leah Kilner, obviously up there in Brisbane as well, is starting to make some progress as well. So it was obviously an extremely harrowing time for their family and friends a few weeks ago, but... And as I mentioned, it's going to be a very, very long road to recovery for both girls. But at this stage, the signs are looking pretty positive.
And, well, we've got a couple of very high-profile trainers sending some more horses back to Melbourne this spring in the likes of Aidan O'Brien and Charlie Appleby.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating, Jared. So all the major entries are out for the big spring races down there in Melbourne a little bit later today. We're talking the Melbourne Cup, Caulfield Cup, Cox Plate. And all the suggestions are that Aidan O'Brien and Charlie Appleby bringing horses back down to Melbourne for the spring carnival. No doubt that Charlie, I think, is looking at bringing some horses to Sydney for the spring as well, targeting the Golden Eagle. But given all the protocols they had in Victoria last year, which I suppose scared away a lot of trainers, didn't want to subject their horses to those, I suppose, quite invasive protocols. They've been wound back a little bit, I believe, this year, and that's going to appease a few of those European trainers. So it'll be great to see some more high-profile European horses come down to Melbourne for the spring later this year, and no doubt that Aidan O'Brien and Charlie Appleby will probably be leading the charge in that respect.
And you've written today in the Sydney Morning Herald about, the process that was done in finding that Nelson Asofa Solomona had no case to answer for that tackle on Wade Egan on Friday night over across the ditch. What, they deliberated for about an hour before deciding that, did they, Adam?
Did you boys listen to Luke Patton's video yesterday?
I didn't listen to it. I've just read his comments.
Yeah, I can understand where he's coming from in a few respects. And I'll be honest, guys, I did a story on the match review committee. It might have been last year, the year before. We actually sat in and listen to how they deliberate. And they are very thorough with their process. I know we sit here and go, oh, what a shocking decision that was, and how did they come up with that? I would never question the process they go through because it is extremely thorough. But even after his explanation yesterday, I still can't cop the fact that Nelson didn't get charged for that. I thought that was an extremely dangerous incident there in the Warriors game on the weekend. And Luke Patton, I think the exact words were that in his mind it was only potentially minor contact that Nelson made with Wade Egan. Well, he's got a few teeth that I think suggest otherwise. And a bit of blood spitting out the side of his face. So I think Nelson is one very, very lucky boy. As I said, I won't question the process they go through, but I definitely question their decision-making in that respect. I thought Nelson should have been charged for sure and be doing a stretch on the sidelines.
Well, I hope you got a bit of a birthday hangover, mate, and have a good day.
I'll try to, boys. And sorry about the late arrival today, and we'll chat again tomorrow.
Don't say sorry to Bulldog.
Apology accepted.
Good on you, mate.